From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Cuddly Fun Anchorman Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. You are so kind. We have a great show for you today. We're excited about our guest, famous and best-selling mystery writer Mary Higgins Clark. She's well-known for writing these Agatha Christie-like novels where just about everybody hates the victim and had a motive for doing him in, you know, just like the House Majority Leader. Anyway, while you're plotting your vengeance, give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there.
Who's this?
This is Savannah from Florida.
Hey, Savannah from Florida. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm okay. Where are you from in Florida?
I'm living in Gainesville right now, but I'm from the Cocoa Beach area.
Cocoa Beach, right?
Yeah.
So are you from like the real Florida or like the snowbird Florida?
I'm from the Florida that nobody wants to be from.
Oh, that Florida.
Yeah.
When you say you're from Florida, born and raised, do people look at you funny?
Either look at me really jealous, and then I look back at them and go, but you really don't know what you're talking about.
I see.
Yeah, because it's just not as good as everyone thinks it is.
So you don't work for the tourism board.
Yeah,
clearly.
Right. Savannah, let me introduce you to our panel. First up, it's a humorist and a lodging industry lighting consultant, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hi, Savannah.
Next, it's the host of The Morning Amp on Vocalo.org, who will be performing in Denver on July 11th at the Voodoo Comedy Playhouse. Mr. Brian Babylon is with us.
Hey, Savannah, how are you?
And next, making her debut on our panel, we are pleased to welcome a comedian and the host of NPR's Ask Me Another, Ophira Eisenberg is here.
Hello, Savannah.
Savannah, welcome to the show. You'll start us off this week with Who's Bill This Time. Bill Curtis is going to read you three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, the voice of scorekeeper emeritus Carl Castle, on your home voicemail. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Now, for your first quote, here is a roundup of reactions to the sudden and surprising departure of a beloved Washington figure.
An opportunist, devoid of substance. A supremely annoying figure. Good riddance.
Those were some of the reactions, according to Jonathan Chait of New York Magazine, to the sudden and unexpected defeat of whom?
I'm going to say Eric Cantor.
You would be right. No House Majority Leader has lost an election since the position was created in 1899, back when the majority whip was an actual whip. Nobody saw this coming, least of all Mr. Cantor himself, who, and this is true, spent more of his campaign funds at steakhouses than his opponent spent on his entire campaign. It also might explain Mr. Cantor's defeat. He completely lost the cow vote.
Well, you know, the thing with this, too, is that, what is his name? Bratt, the guy
his
who
name
beat
is
him?
Bratt. His name is David Bratt.
Dave Bratt?
Yes.
He beat Cantor with like $200,000 mm-hmm. and like a 23-year-old campaign manager. So you just need $250,000 and a millennial. And you could do some things.
That's true.
I saw some of his internet campaign ads, and they looked like they were made with Corel Draw. I mean,
really?
It seemed
that's old
Corel
Draw, like desktop publishing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Microsoft Paint was too expensive for the campaign.
That's right.
It didn't go that way.
Well, I think the wild card here was I read that the guy from Dukes of Hazzard had endorsed
yes.
this David Bratt,
this
the guy who played Cooter.
Yeah.
So,
like the
I
that
would,
guy? That
yeah,
guy?
I would like to read more about the Cooter factor, and if we need to
no, see, you're
consider
not, you're
this
not
in the midterm.
This is actually, everybody is utterly mystified by how this could have happened, because Eric Cantor was voted out by conservative primary voters when he's about as conservative as you can get. I mean, he spent 6 years opposing whatever President Obama did. But some think he was really hurt by a widely circulated picture of him standing next to the president at a formal event. Apparently, he got too close. In addition to small government and lower taxes, the Tea Party also believes in cooties. Savannah, here is your next quote.
Great.
A book the writer didn't want to write and that readers don't want to read. It's a massive bestseller.
That was Jacob Weisberg of Slate talking about the big new memoir, by whom? She's a very prominent figure whose book came out this week. She's out there promoting it. Cover of People. You don't read People?
No, I don't think I do.
Pushing a walker?
Well, some people think that this book is the first step in her presidential campaign. Does that help?
Hillary Clinton?
Hillary Clinton, yes. I was about to say, clearly her massive publicity campaign has not reached Florida.
Yeah.
That's a key state.
Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State, former Senator, you know her. She's out with a new memoir called Hard Choices. It's about all the hard choices she had to make as Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, should I have said spoiler alert?
No, you said snooze fest alert.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Like, you know what I want? I want to hear something like, you know what? I was so mad at the chapter, like, I was mad at Bill Clinton, and then there was that cute Secret Service dude. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah. But,
like, give me some steam.
Now, Hard Choices is a very long book, right? But if you're short on time, perhaps you'd prefer Hillary Clinton's companion pamphlet, Easy Choices. Here's a selection of Easy Choices by Hillary Clinton.
Pantsuits. Always pantsuits. If the Oval Office is rocking, go back to the residence and open another bottle of Pinot. At Taco Bell, always go for the Doritos Taco Loco Extreme.
Now see, that's
Easy Choices.
That's the Hillary I want to vote
there
for.
You go.
Is that from when she just left the White House and was it poor?
Yeah.
Is that from when she was
poor?
Yeah,
that was the other thing, is that she says that she was poor, that they were broke when they left the White House.
Yeah.
Now, how are they going to afford the $1 million house?
Right. I think it's my goal to be Hillary poor, I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure that was true for about 6 hours.
Right. We almost considered selling art.
All right, Savannah, here is your last quote.
I attend an ordinary school in Odessa, my native city. Its number is 28, if it makes any difference to you.
That was a quote from a 13-year-old boy in Ukraine named Eugene Gustman. This week, Eugene Gustman passed something called the Turing test, making him the smartest what in history?
I would say artificial intelligence.
Exactly right, a computer or a robot. Very good. Our robot overlord has arrived, and it turns out it's a very annoying 13-year-old boy, or a simulation thereof. The Turing test tests whether a computer, chatting through text and monitors, can convince someone it's human more than 30% of the time. And this week, a university in England announced that the Eugene Gustman chatbot program did it. Many say, though, that Eugene cheated. It's programmed to be a 13-year-old boy from Ukraine, so, you know, nobody expected anything. Nobody suspected anything when its answers were stilted or strange. So it cheated. Then again, what's more human than cheating?
You know, I've known people who couldn't convince you they were human 30% of the time.
I know.
I've dated those people.
Yeah. The whole point is that this supposedly was the test for whether a computer could really become truly intelligent. And some people are saying, no, you know, it doesn't really count because it's just sort of chatting online. We're all so used to that. And even though we're impressed or maybe even a little frightened when a computer is mistaken for a human, to a computer being mistaken for a human is embarrassing. It's like, sorry, R429, you've tested positive for human. How can that be? I always use McAfee protection.
But you know what? Well, I will say again, we are being a little not sensitive to computers and robots because they don't talk like that no more.
They don't do robot voice.
They don't do robot voice.
They've
now, you know, they've evolved.
Yeah.
That's racist or whatever that is. That's what they're saying. Yeah.
Bill, how did Savannah do in our quiz?
You know, Savannah did very, very well. We're going to call her a winner.
Yes, we are. Congratulations, Savannah. Well done.
Bye bye.
We want to remind everyone they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Brian, the World Cup started this week, and like most Americans, I'm sure you were glued to your TV watching something else. But as the tournament began, one of the big debates among the teams was whether the players would be allowed to do what?
Give me a slight hint.
Well, they're only allowed to score on the field.
Oh, no, man, because it's a party with the locals.
They're not allowed to have sex, is the question. Many teams banned their players from sexual relations for the duration of the tournament. Said the Mexican coach, quote, if a player can't go 1 month without having sexual relations, then they're not prepared to be a professional player.
You gonna say it to me in Rio? That's rude, bro.
The good news is that means about 70% of our listeners are prepared to be professional soccer players. Congratulations, everyone. By the way, the coach of the U.S. team says his players are allowed to have sex, but they still won't be as good at it as the European players.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Brian Babylon, Tom Baudet, and Ophira Eisenberg. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Time now. For the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game, call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Paula.
Hey, Paula, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Shrub Oak, New York.
Shrub Oak, New York?
Little bush, big tree.
Is that your town slogan, or are you making some kind of offer here? I don't... I'm a simple man. I don't understand your sophisticated big city ways.
No.
Where, pray tell, is Shrub Oak, New York?
We're about 50 miles north of Manhattan.
Right.
Big Apple.
The Big Apple. That
wow.
Also sounds totally suspect now. Let's just move on. Paula, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is Paula's topic?
It's not you, it's me. Actually, no, it's you.
Some of us are lucky enough to find true love, the ying to our yang, the Ernie to our Bert. Then, of course, we blow it. Our panelists are going to read you three stories of people finding love, then promptly screwing it up. Guess the real story of failed romance, and you'll win scorekeeper emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. You ready to play?
I'm ready.
Okay. First up, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Nothing But the Truth was a life coaching concept born of love. Michael Chevalier and Beth Parra were meant for each other, both successful, fit, disciplined, and in love. That many splendid, confounded thing clinical tests have shown is second only to watching SpongeBob SquarePants for making you stupid. In their inspired altered state, they vowed to never, ever say anything untrue to one another. This way, they thought, there could be no secrets. Trust would reign supreme, and you get the picture. They joined hands, joined forces, and went to work spreading their gospel of truth in Holiday Inn ballrooms across the country. In the beginning, it was fine. I find children kind of creepy. My real name is Kapinski, not Chevalier. I sometimes lactate when I hear train whistles. The usual stuff. But after they became intimate and traveled together for a while, things took a dark turn. Have you ever had better? Says he. Not in a few weeks, she says. Do these slacks make my butt look too big? Yes, I love your huge butt. It couldn't last. It didn't last. Michael and Beth still travel and coach together, but their relationship now is strictly business. We honestly don't know what we saw in each other, says Beth. But I learned a lot about being in relationship, and that's what we now share with our White Lie Living seminars. Keep secrets, never speak from your heart. Michael agrees. Seriously, lie your butt off. Lie your great big butt off.
Nothing but the truth, as a life coaching technique, finds its match in a relationship. Your next story of love lost comes from Ophir Eisenberg.
Chris Kalouris of New York, New York is reminded of a valuable lesson every time he fiddles with his joystick. If you're going through relationship issues, do not work on your arcade more than your relationship. After moving in with his girlfriend, Kalouris put his Manhattan apartment on the market, but that apartment didn't sell, and he suffocated while cohabitating with his girlfriend, surrounded by all of her stuff. So, inspired by a sci-fi novel about video game culture, he decided to transform his former apartment into his own personal 80s arcade fantasy. Classic arcade games, first edition Transformers action figures, and of course a pull-out futon with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle sheets and matching blanket. What girl wouldn't be impressed? Answer, his girl. As the New York Daily News put it, quote, his fiancé said, game over. Quote, now the only scoring he's doing is on his Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, and Tron machines.
An apartment entirely devoted to video games loses a man his true love. And your last story of someone throwing love away comes from Brian Babylon.
Every guy fears the moment in a relationship when their girlfriend wants to have the talk. Marriage, baby, and ultimately a matching headstone. For Floyd Johnson and his girlfriend Jessica Kinsey of Gary, Indiana, it did not go well. Ex-girlfriend Jessica told the Huffington Post, quote, I told him I want to take things to the next level. Get married, buy a house, and to hear the pitter-patter of little feet. You know, stuff that grown-ups do. Amazingly, Floyd seemed to agree. Said Floyd, quote, I wanted to do something big, fun and funny, like you see on the internet. That was Floyd's first mistake. Quote, she wanted to hear the pitter-patter of little feet, so I went out and got 24 squirrels and let them loose on the hardwood floors in our bedroom. The squirrels freaked out and bit Jessica, who came down with what the CDC has classified a rare case of squirrel-to-human hantavirus syndrome. Side effects including itching, climbing, and wild cravings for acorns. Jessica says, I was actually going to forgive him, but the idiot posted a video on YouTube and it got 2 million views.
All right, here are your choices. One of these is a story of a romance that was going well until it really didn't. Your first was from Tom Baudet, a pair of life coaches who decided to tell each other the truth until they realized that was unworkable. From Ophira Eisenberg, a guy who blew his chance at love and marriage by setting up his apartment as a video game paradise. Or from Brian Babylon, a guy who thought it would be really funny to play a joke on his girlfriend involving a dozen squirrels. Which is the real story of love lost?
Well, it's the dork with the video machines.
All right, well, your choice is Ophira's story about the man who turned his apartment into an arcade. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to the man himself.
You know, it's kind of bittersweet. I've got this amazing arcade, but now the only woman in my life is Ms. Pac-Man.
That was Chris Kalouris. The man whose homemade arcade got in the way of his love life. Congratulations, Paula. You got it right. You earned a point for Ophira, and you've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your answering machine or voicemail. Well done. Thank you so much for playing.
Oh, thank you all. This is great.
Bye-bye. Right.
Bye. Bye-bye.
And now the game where we reward years of hard work with a few moments of discomfort. It's called Not My Job. Mary Higgins Clark is a very nice, sophisticated woman who writes novels about not very nice people who do terrible things. She's one of the most widely published and read authors in the world with millions of books in print. Mary Higgins Clark, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, I am delighted to be with you. Delighted.
Mary, we were reading about your early life, and it's fascinating, and we thought one way of getting into it would just be to ask you your full legal name.
Mary Teresa Eleanor Higgins Clark Carnini. Will that do?
That will do. And so you've traveled quite a fair distance acquiring those names.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, I was born Mary Higgins. I married Warren Clark 60 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was widowed after 14 years, and then after... years of virtuous widowhood, I married John Panini.
I see. And were you a virtuous widow?
Of course I was. I'm a nice Irish Catholic girl from the Bronx.
I understand. You write, though, about very unpleasant people who do various murderous and criminal things.
Well, I always like to read suspense. I like to tell scary stories when I was 6 years old.
Yes.
So I was just sort of drawn into it. You know, I had a checkered career. After school, when I was age 15, I was a switchboard operator at the Hotel Shelton. And our most famous guest, only he wasn't famous then, he had the cheapest room in the hotel, and it was Tennessee Williams.
Oh, really?
And he was writing Glass Menagerie.
The Glass Menagerie, yeah.
Yeah, he was writing it. And funnily enough, all those years later, when I wrote Where Are the Children and I had sold it, he used to live at the Elise Hotel right around from the office where I was working. And we'd pop in there for a drink after work. And the bartender said, you know, Mary, why don't I show Tennessee Williams a manuscript? Maybe he'd give you a plug. And he did. He said, I know a lot of writers who can write better than that.
Really?
But totally true.
So your first novel was your first big novel was Where Are the Children? It was a big bestseller.
That's right.
And you've written many, many novels since then.
Right.
And I was reading your latest, I've Got You Under My Skin, and it's filled...
Isn't it good?
Oh, it's wonderful. I was just about to say, I don't know any writers better than you. Anyway, and...
I love you. I'll buy you a drink.
But what's interesting, thank you, is you seem like a very nice person, and yet you're writing about... Everybody in this book is on some level either a terrible or tormented person or both. Do you ever... I would do this if I had your job and certainly had your skill and talent, which is that... I would use the opportunity of writing murder mysteries to kill people I don't like.
Oh, of course.
Really? So you've done that?
No, don't get mad, get even.
Right. So you have, for example, met someone or had an encounter with someone personally, professionally, they've rubbed you the wrong way, and you say, you're my next victim.
But you know, when I was beginning to send out short stories,
yes,
or books, of course, and I had a stack of them, and Redbook was the magazine, once they... scribbled on the bottom of the rejection slip, Mrs. Clark, your stories are light, slight, and trite.
Oh!
I thought, I'll get you, baby. I'll get you.
Did you?
No, I don't kill people. I just maim them.
You maim them. You're a gentle person. Yeah, I've noticed, do you have a method, because you write so many books and you have so many characters, how do you come up with names for them?
Well, you know what I could do?
What do you do?
I keep dinner invitations, because we go out a lot. You know, there are a lot of affairs, and it's fun. We have a lot of friends. But I look at the guest list, and I never use the same name. But I wrote one book where I got the newspapers from 1890, and I picked out some names from then. And one day at church, this gal afterwards said to me, oh, thank you for using my name in your book. It was third generation of that family in Spring Lake. And I said, oh, did I? Yes, but she said, why did you strangle me on the boardwalk?
Did you have a good answer?
I said, nothing personal.
No. Well, Mary Higgins Clark, what a pleasure to talk to you. We have invited you here today to play a game that we're calling...
I Got Nothing.
Oh, good. Sounds good.
You're such a cheerful person with such a high body count. It's amazing. You are and have always been incredibly prolific as a writer, so we thought we'd ask you about those writers who are not so prolific, those who suffer from the dreaded curse of writer's block. Answer two of these three questions correctly, taken from an article in The New Yorker by Joan Acacella, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill,
well, don't let them count on it yet.
All right. It's a mystery. What may happen? Bill, who is Mary Higgins Clark playing for?
Kirsten Raylor of Soquel, California.
All right. Here we go. Ready to do this?
Sure.
There we go. Now, the term writer's block was invented in the 1940s by a psychologist named Edmund Bergler. What did he think caused writer's block? A, possession by very lazy demons. B, a mental association of black printer's ink with human waste. Or C, vestigial anger over the lack of breastfeeding.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, there's no right answer, so I'll pick the first one.
You're going to pick the... Well, there is a right answer in that he actually thought writer's block was caused by one of these three things.
Well, they're all wrong, but I'll take A.
Oh, I see. You're disagreeing with him. So whatever he might have said, you don't care. It's wrong. So you're just going to pick A, possession by very lazy demons?
Yeah, I am.
Well, they're good for you. That's a good theory, but it's not his theory. His theory was actually C, the breastfeeding. He was a disciple of Freud, of course. He felt that writer's block was caused by, quote, oral masochism, in which the writer becomes enraged at the mother for denying him, or I guess her, milk.
Oh, dear God, how wonderful of him.
Yeah. But you have two more.
Tell the poor soul who was going to get a free something or other that I'm sorry.
No, he's not over yet. It's not over yet. You still have two more chances, you see? Now, various people, including scientists, have tried to cure writer's block. Which of these is a cure proposed by a neuroscientist at Harvard? A, putting your outstanding bills in the keyboard every night so the writer must clear them away before getting to work. A little reminder of what they need to do. B, taking a daily dose of Neapolitan ice cream. Or C, waving a magnetic wand over certain parts of the head.
I think looking at the bills is a good incentive.
You think so?
It for me.
Oh, yeah. Do you think that's the... This is a, now, I want to say, though, this is a neuroscientist, someone who's concerned with the chemistry and physiology of the brain.
Okay, what's my alternative?
Your alternative to the looking at the bills is having a daily dose of Neapolitan ice cream. Has to be Neapolitan, though, okay? Or C, waving a magnetic wand over certain parts of the head.
Then I think I have to go for the ice cream at the bills.
I'm just not going to argue with you anymore. No, it was C, the magnetic wand. This neurologist actually believes that writer's block and depression might be alleviated by magnetic fields. You have one more chance here. Let's see if you get this one right. One of the worst ever cases of writer's block is which of these? A, Donald Lau, who writes fortunes for a global fortune cookie company. He says he has been unable to come up with anything since 1995. B, songwriter Rick Carey, the man behind Who Let the Dogs Out. He says every time he tries to write a song, he ends up with a chorus that goes, who, 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 who? Or C, novelist Dan Brown, who says his last two books are just the Da Vinci Code with all the words rearranged.
I kind of go for that one, frankly.
Really? You want to go for Dan Brown?
I think it could be.
You think you're right. It could be, but it isn't. It's the fortune cookie guy. He told the New Yorker, quote, I've written thousands of fortunes, but the inspiration is gone. Bill, how did Mary Higgins Clark do in her quiz?
Mary was perfectly consistent. And misses out on...
Sounds like one of my rejection slips.
Mary, we would never reject you, but I'm sorry to say you miss out on the Hope Diamond.
There you are.
Well, a failure.
I think you were the opposite of a failure, and I think actually going 0 for 3 on this show is actually a sign of your genius and better priorities. So. Mary Higgins Clark is the author of many, many best-selling books. Her latest, I've Got You Under My Skin, is out now. I can't wait to find out who did it myself. Mary Higgins Clark, thank you so much for joining us.
A great pleasure.
Thanks for joining us. What a pleasure to talk to you. Bye-bye. When he was restless, he was ready to kill. He jumped out the window because he couldn't sit still. The TV was waiting with a safety net. He said, don't bury me because I'm not dead yet. Why don't you tell me about the milk of the dance? I want to know about the milk of the dance. Why don't you show me, because I tried and I tried and...
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. The NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Ophira Eisenberg, Brian Babylon, and Tom Baudet. Here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. In just a minute, Bill makes like Busta Rhymes in the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Ophira, something special. Now, we cover a lot of stupid criminals on this show. This time, we're going to look at stupid victims. For you, right now, we're going to play you three 911 calls that were placed for emergencies that were not quite urgent. Your job, tell us which of these calls is real. Ready to do this?
I'm ready.
All right. Here is your first 911 call.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
I missed the beginning of 24. Sorry, what? Missed the beginning of 24.
So the TV show 24?
With Jack Bauer, 24.
Okay.
There's a terror plot against the President of the United States. He's in London.
So when is this taking place then in London?
Between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m.
All right, that's call number one. Here is your second call placed to 911.
911 emergency dispatch, what is your emergency?
I seem to have a problem. I have gum in my hair.
You have gum in your hair?
Well, I got a lot of it in my ear now, and I can hardly hear out of my one ear.
Okay. Is there any pain? Are you bleeding?
I'm sorry. I can't hear you. Could you say that again?
Guy with gum in his ear, and here is your last 911 call.
911, police, fire, medical.
Yeah, we got a problem here. My wife is struggling in her jacket. Can't get it off.
She's struggling in her jacket?
In her jacket. I want a 911 up here immediately.
Okay, is she not breathing, or?
She's all right. She just can't get her jacket off there. And I pissed about it.
All right, Ophira Eisenberg.
Oh, God.
Which of those was a real tape of a 911 call?
I sort of can see what's happening in the marriage of the last one, where the woman's like, I can't get it off, help me. And she's like, what should I do? And she's like, I don't know, sarcastically, call 911.
Ophira, I guess I should ask at this point, are you yourself married?
I am married.
All right, there you are.
Yeah, he called 911 at her, is what he did.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so your choice, Ophira, then, is obviously the one with the jacket.
Yes, I'm going to say the jacket.
Well, we actually have the remainder of the real 911 call right here for you.
Okay, so you want the fire department to come take
her? Somebody to help her. Yeah.
Okay, can you cut it off of her?
No, I don't want to cut it off. Nice jacket.
Congratulations, Ophira. Yes, you were right. Okay. Tom, every feature of every animal evolved over millennia in response to environmental threats, right? A new study suggests that the faces of men, human males, evolved to their current shape in order to deal with what?
Getting beat up.
Yes.
Isn't that it? Yeah.
Being punched in the face.
Right. Yeah.
According to a study published this week in Biological Review, human males evolved naturally strong jaws, rounded cheekbones, and flattened faces so that they can more easily absorb punches to the face. This came about in parallel as men also evolved to be complete jerks.
So Mike Tyson's distinctive look is like highly evolved.
Exactly. Well, if you think about it, I mean, you think about
so
like,
that's where we're heading.
Right. Yeah.
Mike Tyson face.
Meanwhile, the biggest evidence that there is no intelligent designer is that our faces evolved to take a punch, but even more sensitive areas did not. Really, God, I'm grateful for the strong jaw and everything, but what I really could have used is a crotch skull. Ophira, according to several class action lawsuits that were filed this week, what does not, despite a lot of promises to the contrary, in fact help people lose weight?
Heroin?
Actually, from what I've observed, heroin really is a fine weight loss.
But they didn't have any heroin commercials, did they?
No.
Okay.
How about a hint?
Imagine an ad that went like this. We've replaced your normal Fruit of the Looms with Folgers crystals.
Oh, coffee.
Coffee, but coffee.
Caffeine.
The key word in the hint there was Fruit of the Loom.
Caffeine and infused underwear?
Yes!
What is wrong with people?
Isn't caffeine-infused underwear just like Viagra?
No. Yeah. Two companies, not just one, but two companies have been selling underwear infused with tiny caffeine capsules to zap fat from your behind. Like, like a little espresso machine. It's a gift, really. It saves pain and heartache for those trying to lose weight by simply pouring hot coffee into their lap. The lawsuits allege this underwear doesn't work, even if the jolt of coffee does make your butt a lot easier to be around in the morning. I mean, seriously, don't even talk to my butt until it's had its first cup of underpants.
How do you sell that? How do you sell that to someone? How are you a salesman for, you know, caffeine underpants? How do you say, oh, yeah, now this brand here, they'll just, you know, take
well,
off.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I was curious as to how they made this claim. What was the mechanism? And so I went online and I found an ad for one brand made, I think, by Maidenform Company. And it just shows these little molecules of caffeine going into these Spanx-like underpants, and then like the thighs getting like thinner.
Sure.
So that's how it works.
And this is another example of why I wish people would just celebrate big butts and just, you know, so mix a lot that on up. Celebrate it. Stop letting people like scam you.
I believe one of the lawsuits was filed by Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yes.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or click the contact us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and our first ever show in the mountains outside Denver at the Red Rocks Amphitheater on July 10th. Be sure to check out this week's How to Do Everything podcast. This week we tell you how to overcome your own nerdy name. Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Judd in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hey, how are things in Knoxville?
Beautiful.
I'm glad to hear it. What do you do there?
I teach teachers.
You teach teachers?
I teach teachers at the University of Tennessee.
And who taught you to do that?
My teachers.
So what is, I just want to get a little hint here, what is the most single most important thing you teach a teacher?
Fight the Matrix. I don't know what
you're saying. I mean, it's fine. It's good. That's a good answer. I like that answer. Judd, welcome to the show. Bill Curtis is now going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, here is your first limerick.
Our date's nice. I like where you've rung me. And I love how you fill out those dungarees. Though I may be thinner from skipping my dinner, I seek a big mate, 'cause I'm
hungry.
Yes, hungry. Very good. According to a new study from Britain's Westminster University, hungry men are attracted to larger women. This is because we assume overweight people know where the food is. And because if you get really hungry, they can be very filling. But scientists warn this attraction to larger people can wear off once you're sated. Scientists call this phenomenon burrito goggles.
Huh.
I feel like you just figured out something about yourself.
Huh. Everything came crystal clear.
Oh, my God. All right, here is your next limerick.
Hairy legs make me look like a brute, but this fashion train's gaining repute. I'm not saying goodbye to a jacket and tie, but now shorts can be worn with a
suit.
Yes! Too long have men been forced to swelter away at summer weddings while women get to wear dresses and skirts. No more. It's now perfectly acceptable, even mainstream, to wear shorts with a suit jacket and tie. According to Business Insider, also known as Not Vogue magazine. Here is your last limerick.
With strong doubts, many rats are beset. Take the place where we've lived since we met. If we traded our sewer for one that is newer, we might not be filled with
regret.
Indeed, regret. Very good. According to a new study, rats feel regret. The experiment examined their food choices and discovered that rats remember making poor choices. But it goes beyond that for the rats. Why didn't I negotiate for a better hole? Why didn't I take a left turn in that maze? Why didn't I ask that lady scientist out rather than giving her rabies?
So rats are smarter than we thought.
Well, they have a richer, deeper, more emotional life.
Do they drink? Do they have those kind of problems?
No, rats are, seriously, man, because you live in New York, like, yeah. Rats, because they know things. Because a rat will catch eye contact with you in the subway of New York.
That's right. Yeah.
And
they'll come right
not move and like, you move, man. I make poor choices. What am I doing? You know, like, I make poor choices.
How many times have you gone into a bar and you're sitting there just regretting everything you've done and there's a rat next to you going, yeah, I've been there, man.
Me too.
Exactly. Bill, how did Judd do in our quiz?
So you can tell Judd is a university professor. He got all three right.
Well done. Congratulations. Thanks for playing, Judd.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Tom and Brian each have 2. Ophira has 4.
Whoa! Ophira, not bad for a rookie.
What?
We've flipped a coin. Tom's elected to go first. Here you go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. This week, Al-Qaeda-linked Sunni insurgents took control of 2 cities in blank.
Iraq.
Right after being exchanged for 5 Taliban commanders last week, blank began his journey back to the U.S.
Bo Bergdahl.
Yes. To celebrate his 90th birthday this week, former President blank jumped out of a plane.
H.W. Bush.
Indeed. On Tuesday, a judge in California struck down rules regulating tenure for blanks in that state.
School teachers.
Right. A man in Australia was arrested on DUI charges after he was pulled over for blanking.
Trying to talk to his dog on Skype.
No, he was arrested for driving a motorized cooler under the influence. Best known for her work in A Raisin in the Sun and Do the Right Thing, actress and activist blank passed away at 91 on Thursday.
Ruby D.
Yes, this week Santa Clara University is offering to pay $6,000 for a part-time professor, and they only require that applicants have blank.
Applicants have graduated from high school.
No, they require that applicants for the $6,000 part-time job have published 25 books, founded 2 or more startups, hosted television shows for PBS, cable television, and ABC, and written e-books about water conservation.
I kind of went the other direction with that answer.
Yeah. Potential applicants must also be able to spin straw into gold, lift more than 60 pounds over their head, and have a basic understanding of Microsoft Office. Bill, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom got 5 right for 10 more points. Tom now has 12 points and the lead.
All right.
That won't last.
Brian, you are up next. Mm-hmm. Fill in this blank. The unrest in Iraq has caused blank prices to jump to 8-month highs.
Oil?
Yes. According to a new report, blank crime cost the global economy over $400 billion a year.
Cyber?
Right. Recently elected President Petro Poroshenko has promised to meet with the pro-Russian rebels in blank.
Ukraine?
Yes. In Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, only minor injuries reported when a deck collapsed after 25 people stood on it in order to blank.
Twerk?
No. They stood on the deck to try to take selfies with a rainbow. The truck driver charged in the incident that left comedian blank in critical condition has pleaded not guilty.
Tracy Morgan?
Right. A teenager in Washington was not injured after she fell down a cliff while blanking.
Skyping?
No. So close, she fell down the cliff while talking on her cell phone to her mom, telling her about how scary it would be to fall down a cliff. The woman who's fine had just told her mom how nervous she was about falling down the mountain when she slipped and fell 30 feet down a cliff face. Fortunately, rescuers were able to pull her out about an hour later, and James Franco has already agreed to portray her in the filmed version of this incident, titled 127 Anytime Minutes. Bill, how did Brian do on our quiz?
Brian got 4 right for 8 more points, giving him a total of 10 points. But Tom still has the lead at 12.
All right. How many, then, does Ophira Eisenberg need to take this thing?
She needs 4 to tie, 5 to win.
Fill in the blank, Ophira. This is for the game. On Wednesday, the Senate overwhelmingly passed a bill to help blanks get faster medical care.
Veterans.
Right. Following attacks at the Karachi International Airport, the U.S. has resumed blank strikes in Pakistan.
Drone.
Right. This week, Senator Ted Cruz formally renounced his blank citizenship.
Ugh, Canadian.
Yes. The mayor of San Marino, California, has apologized for blanking while on a walk with his wife.
I'm going to say struggling with his jacket.
No. He's apologized for throwing a bag of dog poop onto someone's yard. Following a loss in the Belmont Stakes, California Chrome failed to achieve a blank win.
A Triple Crown.
Right. A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder won Best Musical at this year's Blank Awards.
The Tonys!
The Tonys! When a high school in Arizona discovered its yearbooks contained offensive quotes from graduating students, instead of reprinting the yearbooks, they blanked.
They lit them all on fire and danced on them.
No, they covered all the offensive quotes with duct tape. The school claims that censoring the yearbooks with duct tape was more cost-effective than reprinting them and would also protect the book's internal HVAC systems. They also said it was the fastest way to remove any offensive material, and they were certain, having educated these kids themselves, no way would they be smart enough to figure out you can pull off duct tape. Bill, did Ophira Eisenberg do well enough to win?
Well, she got 5 right for 10 more points, so with 14... she is the champion
Whoa!
This week.
So dramatic. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that Hillary Clinton's Hard Choices is out, who will be the next person to write a huge book nobody wants to read. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Angie's List, connecting consumers with user-reviewed contractors, an online marketplace, and concierge support for home improvement services. Angie'sList.com. Fifth Generation Incorporated, maker of Tito's Handmade Vodka, American-made and gluten-free, recipes at titosvodka.com, and Gevalia, over 150 years of Swedish expertise dedicated to the art of coffee making. Gevalia, rich, never bitter. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our intern is Seth Sturation Hardware Kelly. And our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks to John Zajac and Les Dolarczyk and Chase Bank. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walt. Over. And Miles, encouraging note, Dornboss. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Andy Yen. Our production coordinator is Mr. Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who will be the next person to write a giant book no one wants to read? Ophira Eisenberg.
Monica Lewinsky, and her book is also called Hard Choices.
Ryan Babylon.
It's going to be Chelsea Clinton with her new mommy book, How to Raise a Kid When You Grew Up Broke After You Left the White House.
And Tom Bodak.
Clive and Bundy's groundbreaking treatise, Everything I Know About the Negro.
And if any of those books get published, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to Brian Babylon, Tom Bodak, and Ophira Eisenberg. Thanks to all of you for listening. You're fabulous. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week in Madison, Wisconsin. This is NPR.